number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quicken Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime. This is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Peyton Manning takes time out to volunteer with local youth groups.
Get your head out of your ass. Suck. Let's go. Except you. I can't even look at you. You know what? Let's take a portal out for 20 minutes.
Guess nobody told him that justice was a team sport.
What does that mean?
He knows what it means. Epic comeback starts right here. Lucky shot.
Mommy, Mommy,
no, Sally, Mommy's dead, remember? Okay, don't bother the pretty lady. I'm Peyton's. All right, now, I'll kill a snitch. I'm not saying I have. I'm not saying I haven't. You know what I mean.
Hi, I'm Peyton Manning, and I have TV.
And I'm really high-voiced Peyton Manning, and I have cable.
Omaha! Omaha!
Chicken parm, you taste so good.
Tony D, with you.
This is Tony D, working the third shift.
From the Quicken Loan Studios, here's
Tony D.
Tony D.
Oh, big, big, big props to Adam Sager for putting that intro together. That is a great intro. The legacy of Peyton Manning not only stems from the brilliant play on the field, but also his ability to sell us stuff and sell us, more importantly, himself. Right there in a nutshell. You heard various clips of his advertising, various clips from his Saturday Night Live bit. He did the United Way, right? It was like a United Way commercial.
Yep.
Which
he plays
is
football with kids. It's
hysterical.
Awesome. That's my favorite one he's ever done.
No, Mommy's dead. Don't bother the pretty lady. Oh, is that not the best? That is the best.
My favorite part of it, I couldn't really put on here because it's not audio related really, but is when the kid's getting the tattoo.
All right.
Of his face, Peyton's face, number one fan.
And he told that kid, I can't even look at you. That's awesome. I actually stole that Peyton Manning, no, Mommy's dead, don't bother the pretty lady. I stole that concept. And I didn't say my wife was dead, but I think I told this story before, I was at a Nuggets game when my son was like a year and a half old. Like he was just a little tiny. He's like just forming words. And I was at a Nuggets game and they were playing Sacramento. And I was heading out and I was in the concourse of Pepsi Center, Chris Webber, who wasn't playing that night, was walking ahead of me and Tyra Banks was right next to him. And I was right behind them. And I happened to be on the phone with my wife at the time. And she put Christopher on the phone because he had just started talking and he was a little cute. He was like 1-2 years old. And he's like, hello, dada. You know, and I'm like, oh, hey, buddy, how are you? Oh, yeah. I'm just doing, you know, little kitty talk. And Tyra Banks turned around and said, oh, that is so cute. And I was so close to going, don't worry, I know Mommy left us, but we're going to be okay. Don't you worry, we're going to be fine. I wanted so badly to just throw that out there because I loved Tyra Banks at the time before she went crazy. But that was kind of, the idea came to me because of what that thing. I thought that was so funny when Peyton Manning had used that in that United Way skit. I almost borrowed it. It was so funny.
That would have been great.
So funny. But Peyton, this is the thing about Peyton Manning, though. And I said this at the onset of the show. He has cleverly crafted who he is, his image. We don't know if it's real. We don't know, you know, we like to think it is, but we're not 100% sure. He has done such a good job of molding this and crafting this that he could, at the end of a Super Bowl, sell us Budweiser and give Papa John a kiss. If I'm telling you right now, if Tom Brady had done that, the outrage would have been unbelievable. Because people are just polarized with Tom Brady. But with Peyton Manning, it's like, well, of course he'd sell us beer and pizza. Why wouldn't he? That's what Peyton Manning does. He's always been a phenomenal salesman of himself. Always. And that's not a bad thing. I don't say that in the negative way. He's not pitching us, you know, buy real estate with no money down. He's not selling us that. He's selling us a Peyton Manning image that might be just slightly or a lot distorted from who he really is. I kind of think it's close. I just don't think you can play up to that level too much. I mean, there is, I'm sure there are, there's a dark side to Peyton Manning that we never really see. And I got to be honest with you. There have been times where Peyton Manning has said things in public that I knew were calculated, and I just went, ooh, okay. You know, he threw his offensive line under the bus in that loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers 10, 12 years ago. And he did it sort of in that Peyton Manning way, where he doesn't come right out and say, I'm angry at my offensive line. He says things like, well, you know, we had some protection issues. And it's just a subtle way. Make sure you get your point out there, but don't do it in a way that's aggravated, no screaming, no anything like that. That's what he does. He's brilliant at it, absolutely brilliant at it. And I've always respected him for it because he knows the long game. You don't get to be a broadcaster. You don't get to be sort of a post-sports career salesman if you don't have some sort of charismatic personality. You know, I mean, look at the guys who have been who head to the broadcast booth. They have charismatic personalities. Some in a good way, some in a not so good way. Ray Lewis had a charismatic personality, screaming on the sidelines, always right. He gets a broadcasting gig. It's not the greatest broadcasting gig. He's not that great at it, but he gets one. The guy I thought there's one exception to the rule that I have to bring up because I have to give him credit. And I've even told my wife this because my wife was not a big fan of his when she was living in Tampa Bay. She really did not like him. But he has turned into a great broadcaster, and that's Trent Dilfer. My wife didn't like Trent Dilfer. She's a Buccaneers fan. She hates Trent. She just didn't like Trent Dilfer. But I told her, I said, you know what? You can disagree with things he says and all that stuff. That's irrelevant. I look at the style, the comfortableness on camera, the ability to get your point across. I'm way past whether a guy is right or wrong. I'm way past. It's just in an opinion-based business, I look how they deliver their message. And I think Trent Dilfer delivers his message great. Really great. He's spot on. And I think Peyton Manning is going to be as good, if not better, if he gets into broadcasting. The only thing that I'll wonder about him, it's the same thing I wondered about when Tim Tebow joined the SEC network. Can he be critical? Can he be critical, especially with guys he's played against over the years? Can Peyton Manning be critical of the way Tom Brady played a game? Those two are legendary players, played against each other, 17 times in their career? Can he be critical of the way Tom Brady plays a particular game if he gets into network television? Can he be critical of Brock Osweiler, the way he plays a game? Can he be critical of almost anybody he's played against? Some guys can do it. Some guys have a hard time doing it. It's not easy. Because they're all friends, right? They all hit each other up on text. Hey, man, why are you making those comments about me? Why are you saying, you know, my job now? I wonder if he can. Because if he can, I think he's going to be great at it. If he's hesitant, there's a problem. I thought Tim Tebow would be absolutely vanilla. I thought Tim Tebow on camera would be the most boring analyst that you'd get on TV. Everybody's awesome. Everybody plays hard. Everybody brings it every night. Everybody was ready to play. Everybody can't wait to hit that field. Everybody, you know, just, oh, God, cliche after cliche. He's been the exact opposite. He's been great. Absolutely great. A lot of that has to do with good television coaching. But a lot of it has to do with that willingness to go out there and be critical. I think if Peyton Manning is a broadcaster and he can get over being critical of the people he used to play against, he'll be fantastic. Because, again, he's been selling us Peyton Manning forever. Those Saturday Night Live bits last today. Peyton Manning, I think those were from 2003 or 2004. And those are old bits, I think. I might be wrong on the dates, but I know they weren't done yesterday. And they still hold up. They still hold up because he's really crafted that message. I mean, he has found a way. This is the one thing that quarterbacks have a hard time doing it. He has found a way to be self-deprecating and be able to make fun of himself better than anybody I've seen at that high profile position. Right? Joe Montana still was selling sexy. Right? Joe Namath was still selling Joe Cool. Peyton Manning can sell losing ping pong games. He can sell chicken parm, you taste so good. New car smell. He can sell all that because he has mastered this craft. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Taking you through the night tonight. Before we get to the phones, what kind of press conference do you think Manning's going to have? Is it going to be eloquent or is it going to be simple?
I'm going to go more simple. I don't think he talks that long.
Do you think he gets into like my dad, Eli, and Cooper, and I want to thank, and just goes on and then talks about like, as a young kid, I dreamed one day of being in the NFL, or do you think it's just, I'm calling it a day, and thanks for everything, and my thanks to my parents and my brothers and my wife, and goodbye.
I think it'll be more of that. I think he'll think, you know, like Coach Dungy and, you know, his coaches at Tennessee. He'll kind of think those people, like the top-level people, you know, like high school coach, something like that. But I don't think he goes deep, deep, you know. It doesn't start talking about when he was a kid growing up.
Yeah.
You know, being Archie's kid or anything like that.
Do you think he cries?
Yes.
I do too.
I mean, he cried when he left Indy, which was part of that first open I did.
Yeah. He's got to, right?
He's definitely there. Yeah, he will.
I can't imagine losing something, like giving up something that's been part of your life since pretty much you could walk.
Yeah.
It's just got to be. I mean, look, you can say he's played 18 years in the NFL. He's been playing football his whole life. And it's over.
How old is the oldest Manning of who had been Archie's grandson? How long do we have to wait till the next?
We still have
Eli, obviously, for probably another.
Has Cooper got any teenage kids? We should
got to be somewhere around there. I'm sure I can figure this out. I'll look it up.
Mannings.
See when the next Manning kid is, you know, being recruited by Ole Miss in Tennessee.
Yeah.
See when they're fighting over him.
Yeah, Peyton Manning's going to be like, yeah, you know what? You probably should go to Ole Miss. My life was a living hell when I decided to go to Tennessee.
Maybe they switch it up and go to a different SEC school.
Right. Oh, yeah. I was going to go to South Carolina. Well, yeah. You're not even a Manning now.
Yeah.
Choose to go to South Carolina. All right, let's go to Robin in Tulsa. You're next up on Yahoo Sports Radio. What's on your mind, my friend?
No, the next Manning will go to Alabama.
Yeah, that's probably true. Do you know why? Because he wants to win a national title. Something the other ones couldn't get.
Nick Saban's already writing a recruiting letter to him right now.
That's probably true.
It's kind of funny as you brought up Tim Tebow, because I've played it in my mind before about maybe you could match up Tim Tebow and Peyton Manning as a broadcast team.
I wouldn't mind that. That actually would be pretty cool.
That could maybe mix Pat Summerall and John Madden.
Oh, well, one of them's got to do play-by-play. Who gets to do that one?
That's true. So, and I think the only unscripted thing I ever heard Peyton Manning say was talking about Mike Vanderjagt, the liquored-up idiot kicker.
Yeah, but that was kind of calculated, too, in a way. I mean, didn't you get the feeling like he was kind of like, I'm gonna make it known, like I'm going to send a message to Vanderjagt here at the Pro Bowl? But, yeah, that idiot kicker thing was classic.
I would agree, but to me, that's the only time I've really seen him kind of get truly upset at a certain player by name.
Oh yeah, oh absolutely. I can't think of anybody else he's ever publicly admonished.
And will he bring up Phil Fulmer and Bill Polian?
Oh, he'll bring up Phil Fulmer, and I would think if he's going to do the thank you thing, he's bringing up both guys.
And yes, he will cry.
I believe he will cry too.
Thank you, Tony.
You bet, man. Appreciate it. He's got to cry. I'd have less respect for him if he didn't cry. I mean, I can't imagine this. I can't imagine. Listen, I'm lucky. I love broadcasting. And guys who do it in my business do it until their 70s and sometimes in their 80s. We used to talk about this all the time, that if you could land a play-by-play job in Major League Baseball, I have friends who work in Major League Baseball, are play-by-play broadcasters. They know that as long as they keep doing a good job and the fans like them and no one you know has any problems with what they do, they can do it till they're 80, like Vin Scully. They can do it forever. They can do it past the 65-year retirement. They can do it till whenever. But sports is so different. It's not like that. And eventually it comes to an end. And I do expect guys who give their whole lives to the sport and sacrifice, I would like to see them get a little emotional. I think it would be fitting. Now, I can't demand that. It's all individual personality, but I mean, like I said, he got emotional when he had to leave Indianapolis. I can't imagine he's a Manning, for crying out loud. Football has been it since forever, since he was a kid. He's played flag football, junior high football, whatever it is he's played, Pop Warner football, leading up to high school, down to college, and at 18 years in the NFL. He's lived everything. And now he's not going to be able to play again. All right, 800-777-2907. And one of the things we were talking about with Manning is, does it matter that where the criteria is? Like, when people are going to start talking this week about, is he the greatest of all time? And it's already started. All right, it's already started. People are already writing articles and columns that he's the greatest of all time. Does that matter? I mean, when we really want to set a person's career in sort of some sort of, you know, perspective, does it matter? Because if I've got a group of people that think Tom Brady and the Super Bowls and the playoff record are more important than regular season statistics or MVP awards, what criteria are we working at? Look, baseball is a very statistically based sport. Very statistically based sport. You know, batting averages, home runs, I mean, RBIs, triple crowns, strikeouts, ERA, Cy Young awards. It's all statistically based. And they try to do it in a way. Baseball has done this pretty successfully, is that you can compare a player from the 1930s to a player from the 1960s to a player from the 1980s to a player from 2000s, even though they all play in different ballparks and they all, you know, the mound has been raised and lowered and different umpires have different strike zones. And there's all sorts of the dead ball era and the steroid era. I mean, there's so many different variables that go into statistics in Major League Baseball, but they're all pushed aside because if a guy bats 320 for his career and another guy bats 301, the guy who bat 320 was a better hitter. Nobody ever considers the variables. People just go, this is what they are. This is the statistics. Football is so different because football statistics and era and time and place do matter. We do that all the time. If you're a running back with a certain number of rushes and a certain number of yards, people will point out if that person spent most of his time running in a dome. If you're a quarterback, people will spend plenty of time assessing where you've played and who you played with. Right? I mean, that's what we do. Basketball. Basketball is interesting because basketball, we have all sorts of different criteria. Sometimes it's NBA championships. Once we established Michael Jordan as the greatest player who ever lived, look at the amount of focus Kobe Bryant put in to try to get six. Kobe wasn't just rolling along trying to get as many championships as he could. He wanted six because he knew what six meant. That he could be in the conversation if he got six. Now, that might be delusional, but that's the way we set it up. Even though Michael Jordan's overall body of work as an NBA player was more than just the six titles he won. Right? The criteria is different for every single sport. When we get to the conversation about Peyton Manning, some people will say, I can't put him on the list. Joe Montana is 4-0 in Super Bowls with no interceptions in those games. Tom Brady went to six Super Bowls and won four. I can't do it with Manning. I don't know if in the end it matters. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and YahooSportsRadio.com.
Hey, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio as we continue to talk about Peyton Manning. I want to get to some other stuff. Sunday, I took my daughter to Nissan Stadium here in Nashville. The United States women's soccer team was in town, and they were playing France in something called the She Believes Cup. And there were two games, really. There was the United States versus France, and then England played Germany. And if for those of you who remember this, like, listen to the show for a while, back, I don't know if you remember this, Adam, when I went to Chattanooga with my daughter over the summer and took her to the game.
Yeah, the one with, like, the storms.
Yeah, so this is, I'll reset the story real quick. So my daughter plays soccer, and she loves this team. And so, you know, when there were tickets to see them after they had won the World Cup in Chattanooga, I bought two tickets to take her down there so she could see the team. And it was in August, and we drove down there, and we were at the game and having a good time, and the storm came in, a big, huge thunderstorm, I mean, lightning and everything. They got the players off the field. It was pouring. Wind was bending trees. Lightning, it was bad. And we were all huddled underneath the concourse of the stadium at Finley Stadium in Chattanooga. We were all, like, cramped. I mean, you could barely move. It was stuck. And luckily, my daughter had found one of her friends, a couple of her friends, and she was just kind of hanging out. We were waiting out the storm, and, you know, we were wondering when the game was going to get started, but it was coming down in buckets. And I know from being in, you know, at baseball games and things like that, that usually when a game is delayed, they wait 30 minutes until the last lightning bolt. When they see the lightning bolt, they usually wait 30 minutes past that point to even consider starting the game. So I knew we were in for a long night. So we were underneath the concourse waiting, and we only saw like 8 minutes of the game. And a security guy kept going through the area, and he kept yelling to everybody that the game had been canceled. And he said, game's been canceled, game's been canceled, game's been canceled. And everyone was like, really? Is the game's been canceled? He's like, yes, the game's been canceled. They're going to reschedule it. Save your ticket stubs. You'll check online for the reschedule of the game. So he's saying this to everybody. So we left. It was raining, but, you know, we ended up leaving. We ran to our car, got out of town. So I'm driving back up to Nashville from Chattanooga, and we decided to pull at a restaurant, little Wendy's. We went in to get something to eat. So we're in line to get food, and we see another family come in, guy and daughter, wife. They're all wearing USA stuff. So we figured they're from the game. So I just struck up a conversation with him, like, ah, man, it's kind of bummed out. Where'd you drive from? He's like, yeah, we drove from Murfreesboro. And I'm like, ah, we're from Nashville. Ah, we just casual conversation. So while we're in line for food, he gets a text from his buddy. Now, we're 20 minutes away at this point. Like, we're 20 minutes from the stadium. And he gets a text from his buddy that the women are on the field. And the game is going to start in a half an hour. So the women were back on the field warming up. And we're like, wait a minute, hold on. When we left, I mean, we were dodging huge raindrops and some lightning to get to our cars. And sure enough, the game was going on. Well, by this time, I couldn't turn around and go back. I needed to be back here. I still had the show to do. It was already getting late, and we drove home. I didn't quite believe the story, and so I talked to my wife, and sure enough, she checked online, and sure enough, the game had been on the whole time, that the security guy was totally wrong. And a lot of people left that stadium who paid a couple hundred dollars for four or five tickets, and some traveled long distances to see that team. We were all devastated. I mean, I was devastated. My little girl, I couldn't wait to take her down there to see that game. I couldn't wait so she could. I mean, look, I get to do this with my son. I get to take him to sporting events. My daughter doesn't really want to go see a lot of sporting events, but she wanted to go see Alex Morgan. She wanted to see Abby Wambach. She wanted to see Hope Solo. She wanted to see these women. And I blew it. I blew it. I left the stadium. So anyway, I said to her, I will try to make this up to you. So they had scheduled a match in March, you know, Sunday, in Nashville. So I immediately bought tickets. And I told my daughter, I said, I don't care what the weather is. We are the last people to leave the stadium. Like, we're no matter what people say, they're going to have to drag us out before I leave. We're going to stay. So I got redeemed. So this made me feel really good. You know, my daughter was such a good sport about it. Like the whole time she's like, it's okay. Don't worry about it. I was like, no, I really wanted you to see this team. So anyway, we took them to see the team. Now, let me just say this. I say all that because same thing in Chattanooga, same thing in Nashville. Adam, I kid you not, this team, they are rock stars to little girls. I mean, rock stars. I could not believe the crowd that showed up to see a women's soccer game. I couldn't believe it. Again. And this was in a bigger stadium. Now, Finley Stadium in Chattanooga is a very nice Division II, one AA school. So it's not like they play at, Nissan Stadium. They played in Nissan Stadium. They filled all of the lower bowl and some of the upper bowl. It was loaded with kids. I mean, kids were screaming. Everybody was wearing a jersey. All the girls went crazy. And I thought I was thinking to myself the whole time I was watching this and I was watching the attention. I was thinking, okay, I completely understand the deficiencies in soccer for the men. I completely get it, how we don't have the right system in place to be a world power in soccer. People say we're getting close. I'll wake me up when that's actually occurred. All right. Wake me up when we have a legitimate shot at winning the World Cup. But seeing the amount of young girls who are in the stands, I think the women's soccer team is going to be dominant for decades based on the interest that these girls have in being on that team or being around that team. It was phenomenal. But my question is, how come then these girls play in these professional leagues? These women play in these professional leagues. Do they last? Do they make it? Does that translate? Does that excitement translate into, I'm going to buy season tickets for my daughter to the Houston Dash or the Orlando, whatever the Orlando team is.
Supposedly the Houston Dash down here in Houston, I mean, that's all I know, but they have been doing pretty good, I guess, from everything I hear.
I hope so, because there's an audience.
Yeah.
All you're looking for is an audience. You don't have to play to the right type of crowd. You don't have to play to men. You don't have to say, well, the men aren't interested, so we're not going to make it. I barely saw any young boys at this. I barely saw any young teenage or 10-year-old boys at the stadium. Now, I'm not saying there weren't any, just a lot of the concourse was filled with girls, and they were all losing their minds. And if I'm a parent, listen, I take my son to Vanderbilt. He loves Vanderbilt. I take him to basketball games. I take him to baseball games. I take him to football games. I planned a trip to take him to see Tennessee. We go see Nashville Predators hockey. These are all things my daughter doesn't have any interest in. The one thing my daughter does have any interest in is women's soccer. And I've taken her to Vanderbilt. I've taken her to Belmont. I will take her to the women's national team. I would take her to a professional team if we had one. You'd think that these leagues would make it. They should make it. There's a built-in audience. These girls are crazy. And the line for souvenirs ran out of everything after halftime. Everything. Shirts, balls, scarves, hats, everything.
Wow.
I went up to get a soda at midway through the second half. I just ran. I was like, I got to run and get something to drink. I ran up to get a soda. The concession line was still long, and everything that they had on the walls was taken down, meaning they were sold out of everything. They had some black shirts that said World Champions on it with the dates of the World Cups. They had a few of those left, and they had a couple of baseball caps, but all like the little jerseys were gone. I mean, everything was gone. I couldn't believe it. Loaded. It was really an impress. If you like business, sports business, you could see something there. I got to tell you, it would make you, like, if you were trying to invest in something, it would make you want to invest in. It was that, and then I wonder if that's a risky investment. If in the end, this women's professional league is just going to go belly up, like most of them do. I don't know, I kind of hope not, because to see the joy on all those girls' faces was kind of neat. All right, 800-777-2907. Coming up, talk about Ben Simmons in the NCAA tournament and Golden State, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, so while I was on my way home from said soccer game that I brought up in the last segment, I heard on the radio that the Golden State Warriors had lost to the L.A. Lakers. Explain that one to me, Mr. Adam. Poor shooting night for Steph Curry and Klay Thompson?
Yeah, I would say so. They went a combined 1-for-18 from the three-point line.
Yeah, they ain't going to do it.
You know what's interesting is, I don't know if you saw, I saw a tweet from, I don't know if it was ESPN or someone big, saying that this was the Warriors' 61st game. The Chicago Bulls' 61st game, they lost by, it felt like 100 to the New York Knicks. I think it was 125 to like 86 or something. Like, they got destroyed by the Knicks on their 61st game. So,
oh, that's wild.
Just kind of matched up. I believe the Warriors are one game ahead pace-wise of the 95-96
so
they, Bulls.
Yeah, so the record is still. They've lost six games now? Six.
Yes.
So 55 they can afford six. They can only afford three more losses.
Right.
That's it. After that, then they're going to tie the record.
It's going to be interesting because Steve Kerr has come out and said that he values rest for his guys coming down the stretch.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But let's remember, he's part of that Bulls record.
Yeah, you know what? He better be careful. He's going to get accused of that.
Yeah. There'll be people, no matter what, there'll be Bulls fans complaining to him, be like, well, that was our record. You were part of that team. And
what's wrong with you?
Yeah, and then if he starts resting guys, they'll be like, oh, that's because you played for the Bulls. And
I think there's a larger question here. I think talk of them getting or not getting the record right now is still way, way too early.
Yeah.
What I will say is this, because I mentioned this on Friday's show, there's a team nobody's talking about that now I think we should be talking about, is that's the San Antonio Spurs.
Yeah.
They're 2.5 games back.
I know. They're not losing either.
Right. And they're not losing either. And here's the thing. We know Golden State is very, very good. We're not, you know, that we're not denying. But we don't know how the next couple of games are going to go. They could catch a bad streak. They could catch people's best night. Next thing you know, you're losing games that they shouldn't. You know, just maybe catch yourself a bad week. And all of a sudden, the Spurs could be right there on their heels. The thing is, you have a historic year like this, you should be blowing away people at this point for the number one seed in the Western Conference. This is still not only up for grabs, it's very much up for grabs. And the Spurs are quietly having one of their best years in franchise history. And yet, focus on Golden State, and rightfully so. Golden State's going for a record. I get that, and all of those things. But the Spurs ain't losing. Look, Manu Ginobili missed a month, came back, scored 22.
And you know Popovich and Duncan and Parker and, you know, not so much Leonard and Aldridge, but those other guys, those main core guys that have been there a long time, they don't care whatsoever. And they're just like, keep talking about the Warriors. Keep talking about
the
Warriors.
That's fine. This is exactly what they want.
Soon as, you know, we'll get to the Western Conference Finals, and when we face those Warriors, let's just see. I mean, two best teams in the league by far. Let's see who wins the seven-game series.
Yeah, it's so interesting that they are getting – they're not. It's not a push. It's just a nudge. Right, it's just a little nudge from San Antonio that's just keeping it honest.
And keep in mind, the Spurs just added Kevin Martin. That's another shooter to that roster.
Yeah.
That's scary for teams because he can also play some defense as well.
It is like I said, remarkable. I equated this as the Sammy Sosa of the NBA. Like, all the attention is going to be on Mark McGwire, but Sammy Sosa breaks the record too. I don't think the Spurs break a record, but they're going to have a year that by any other year would be phenomenal. I mean, they might lose like 11 games. They've already got 9. They may lose one, you know, 2 or 3 more. That's still a fantastic season, but it's completely under the radar. I mean, I'm not kidding when I'm saying no one is talking about the Spurs. Nobody is talking about the Spurs.
You know what I'm finding interesting is going to the East. I mean, you got guys coming out and being like, oh, now you got to Yeah, watch out for the Heat, or you got all, you know, oh, you got all. Boy. I've even seen people mentioning the Bulls as a team that could make a deep run. I'm like, what is going on right now? Like, is this just a part of the season where it's just we're in our big time lull? So everyone's just like,
that must be it.
Let's just throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks. Because, I mean, do you really think a Heat team? I mean, they still don't have Chris Bosh, but even if they get Bosh back, I mean, I don't see that Heat team beating the Cavs.
I don't see anybody beating the Cavs.
It's a bunch of old guys. No.
That's the thing. Look, if it was the NCAA tournament, sure.
Yeah.
But when you have a two-week period of breaking down and trying to attack a very good basketball team, this is why you can concede a lot of the NBA to Golden State, is that, yes, how does Golden State lose games? Golden State loses games when they travel and when they're kind of playing back-to-back, or this was not a back-to-back because they played Thursday against Oklahoma. So they had plenty of time to worry about the lowly Lakers. But for the most part, you can look and say, all right, they're on the road. It's a back-to-back or a situation like that. But when it's a playoff and it is two games are here and it's spread out. Look, remember, we always yell at the NBA. Why does it take 2.5 weeks to play a 7-game series, right? Game one is on a Tuesday night. Game two is on Friday, right? And when you have all of this time, what you start looking at is coaching, who can prepare better, and is that team capable of keeping its pace and doing what it does? Golden State is well coached. They're smart. They're deep. They are going to withstand the best diagram/plays/strategies of anybody. The only guy that I think could probably figure them out is Popovich.
Yeah.
And the Spurs.
And the Warriors, they don't beat themselves.
No, they don't
beat
themselves.
When they lose, it's because they're missing shots, mainly.
Yep. They're missing shots. Or like I said, like that night in Milwaukee when they lost their first game, they were exhausted. Right? It was just exhausted. And Kerr pointed this out. You're going to lose games in 82 games just based on... Just don't have it. And they didn't have it. Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.